Me Too, Black Lives Matter, Giving Tuesday. Getting the attention of an audience in our fractured media world isn't easy, but there is a way. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with an author who has strategized how to empower social movements in the digital age. That chat about new power starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This may sound a bit grandiose, but for context, I think we're going to need it. The Bronze Age, the Renaissance, the Industrial Revolution, and the rise of digital technology. Now, every major epoch in human history is tied to a technological advance, whether it's ancient metallurgy or the digitization of human consciousness. These periods also led to social conflict, even wars. But we're going to leave that aside just for a second, because knowing how to navigate these technological sea changes is possible. And a book like New Power is, in my opinion, bound to become a benchmark guide for navigating the 21st century politically, economically, and especially socially. The next interview is with the co-author of New Power, How Power Works in Our Hyperconnected World, and How to Make It Work for You.
You know, Me Too is a terrific example of how new power works, right? It's mass participation. It's a collective action. It's built stronger as it passes across the world.
Here's what New Power addresses: how a new power structure is shaping the way ideas are spread, movements are built, and communities are managed. Why groups ranging from online platforms and politicians to terrorist networks and political lobbyists are co-opting these new means of participation. What tools might empower those who'd instead seek to build a more open, equitable, and participatory world. I know, but our conversation starts now.
Hi, I'm Henry Timms. I'm the co-author of New Power.
The subtitle is How Power Works in Our Hyperconnected World and How to Make It Work for You. Mr. Timms, thank you for your time. This is an incredibly important book, and we're going to get into why in a second. But I was a little bit taken aback when the very first page, very first sentence, you mentioned Bertrand Russell. And I thought that was a touchstone for me, and that kept me going, actually, because if you're going to whip out Bertrand Russell in the first page of a book, you better be backing it up, right?
Yeah, I think we did. To be fair, we played the Bertrand Russell card quite early.
Well, one of the things about Bertrand Russell philosophy is that his belief is that philosophy declines in value as science advances. And that's kind of why I got interested in at least in the beginning of the book. And of course, I kept going after that. What brought you to bring to bear the thought behind a new power, this new book?
So we were thinking a lot about, you know, we all sense the world is changing. We all feel the chaos. And what we were trying to do was put a frame around it that kind of accurately described what's really going on. And we talk about that as understanding new power. And so to give you a kind of definition of that, new power is really the kind of ultimate skill of the 21st century, right? It's the skill to harness the connected crowd, and to go back to Bertrand Russell, and to get the outcomes you're seeking in the world. So you look across our world, from the unexpected elections of Trump and Obama to the movements like Me Too and the Parkland high school kids, through to platforms like Facebook and Uber. And what they all have in common, and they of course have so many things which are different, but what they all have in common is they're capturing this connected crowd and getting it to head in the direction that they're looking for. And that's what the book is really about.
And we are going to come back to Barack Obama and Donald Trump as a study in contrast, which is something you cover very effectively in the book. It's also top of mind right now because of the Facebook scandal with Cambridge Analytica, et cetera. We'll come back to that in a little bit. But one thing that stood out for me was it seems that your book helps us explain the new rituals. I think I've heard you say before, using the Elks Lodge as an example. I remember as a kid, as a younger man, a would-be father-in-law wanted me to join his Odd Fellows chapter. That kind of thing.
Did you join?
No, I did not, although she was a lovely person. I think we're talking about finding new rituals in a way here, aren't we?
You know, I think that's a terrific word, because I think one of the things that we often get confused by with new power is it kind of has a set of values tied to it which are very different than the old power values we're used to. So you think about kind of the Elks Club or the church or the synagogue or the United Way or the local club. And we had a set of expectations around those institutions, which were really about long-term affiliation, fairly regular processing, that they weren't offering huge amounts of agency to people in the way that a new generation expects something very different. And so what we're seeing in the new power world is actually less long-term affiliation, but more kind of intense affiliation. So we're seeing these protesters surge. We're seeing these movements flare up. We're seeing people a lot less interested in the rituals of things like organized religion, who say, come to a service once a week, sit at the back, do as you're told, and live life on our terms. And what we're seeing in its place is a generation rising up who expect things to operate on their terms, not the terms of institutions. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing. So there are all sorts of challenges that come with that. But it's absurd not to recognize that that shift is taking place. And one thing I think institutions need to start thinking about is how they're going to reinstitutionalize, how they reimagine their work to capture a generation who have this inalienable right to participate. They come into the world expecting to shape it in their direction. And the organizations who are winning are providing opportunities for them to shape.
Okay, Mr. Timms, let's talk about something in your answer there that was the attention span or the personal focus of an audience. If the candle burns half as long that burns twice as bright, it seems to me that setting real collective goals and measurements would be critical to new power. Am I overestimating that?
No, it's a lovely phrase about the candle. I hadn't heard that before. I think we are at a place now where one of the interesting things which is happening with new power is it's forcing people to get quite confused about the role of movements and the role of institutions. And they aren't really the same thing. So I think one of the critiques of institutions right now is they don't behave like movements. And the critiques of movements is they don't behave like institutions. So we look at some of these very exciting movements going all over the country. You look at an Occupy or you look at a Black Lives Matter, and people will be criticizing them for not doing enough on policy goals. Or you look at kind of a long-standing institution, some of the kind of like 20th century big mega charities, and people accuse them of not doing enough to mobilize people around their messages. And actually, the more interesting dynamic is what we're beginning to see is changes coming about through this relay mechanism between movements and institutions. So let's take Me Too as an example, which I think, Me Too is a terrific example of how new power works, right? It's mass participation. It's a collective action. It's built stronger as it passes across the world, sideways amongst women. And you look at the way in which Me Too has come to scale, and what's so interesting is that new power surge of Me Too has now relayed to the work that being done by Time's Up. So you're starting to see this interesting interplay where movements are shifting cultural narratives and shifting norms, and then institutions are coming in to make some of those changes. And I think that dynamic is a very interesting one, and one we should have particularly top of mind as we think about things like the gun control movement and the amazing example that's being set to the nation by the Parkland High School kids. That movement is terrific. The question, I think, is now going to be how those institutions come in to take all of that energy and turn it into long-lasting policy change.
And that's fascinating that your book is so up to date. It is so current. I was taken with the fact that very early on, I'm looking at a chapter about Me Too and Harvey Weinstein. I don't know how you got to press that quickly with these updates, but it's a quite impressive feat, I have to say.
We wrote it very, very last minute. So the very beginning of the book, one of the things we're trying to do is explain the difference between old power and new power. And, Harvey Weinstein was such a kind of evil example of what old power can do, right? It's very kind of command and control. He kind of hoarded up all this power. He spent it down like a currency. He could keep secrets in. He could make or break careers and movies. He operated under this kind of old power mindset. And that's so different to how Me Too operates, right? Me Too operates because it passes from peer to peer, because it's made by the strength of many. And as Me Too goes around the world, it becomes stronger as it surges like a current, not like a currency. So you look at the way that Me Too in America turns into a movement called Renounce Your Pig in France. The same values are behind that, but it actually morphs into something very different. And we see that time and again with new power movements is they get stronger as they change, not when they stay the same.
So the very fact that you were able to, at your own admission, very quickly add the Me Too and Harvey Weinstein portion of your book to your critical theory and strategy here proves its strength and efficacy. If you can apply that quickly to that, that means it is strong and has proven and withstood a peer test, in my opinion. And actually, it's almost like a baptism by fire to get that in the book that late and to have your thinking already so clear. So congratulations.
Thank you.
One of your other bona fides is, besides your work at 92nd Street Y in New York, is your work with Giving Tuesday. I think we should talk about that for a minute, too, because I bet that was kind of an informative period for you when it comes to writing the book New Power. And when you're describing these movements, I noticed that you have four M's. You have mobile, matches, measures, and meaning. That's the way you presented them, in at least the talk that I watched. Could you put that in a more value-oriented list? Could you go one to four? Like, which one would you approach first if you're trying to apply the thinking of New Power to a new movement?
If I'm allowed to disagree with my own thinking, I think I'd replace all four with mindset.
I think
the key to New Power is actually not about whether you can master the technology, but how you think about it. So I'll give you an example. So Giving Tuesday, you know, we launched Giving Tuesday as a response to Black Friday and Cyber Monday. So you know about Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which are all about consumption. The thinking was, okay, could you create a day that was all around philanthropy, around people giving back, around kind of those common causes? And this also takes us back to your question earlier about ritual. You know, we were thinking about Giving Tuesday as a ritual. We go into the holiday season, we do all of this consumption. Would it be possible to launch a day that was actually reversing that dynamic and all about people caring for others was the driving idea behind Giving Tuesday. And so if you think about a movement like Giving Tuesday, in the old power world, here's how you would design it. You would say it's called the 92nd Street Wise Giving Tuesday. We would charge people to take part. We would make sure all the money goes through one centralized platform, which we would take a percentage from. And we would tell everybody you have to participate and you have to give in the following three ways. But Giving Tuesday was designed as a new power movement. It was designed to spread and to move around the country and around the world. So Giving Tuesday, we never branded it with the 92nd Street Wise brand. It was always hashtag Giving Tuesday. From the very start, we encouraged people to take this idea and make it more meaningful by adopting it, by changing it. So Giving Tuesday is now in 100 countries. It raised $370 million in the U.S. just online last year, $100 at a time in terms of gift size. And what's interesting about Giving Tuesday is how much it's changed as it's grown. So it's become very local. Lots of places around the world have turned it into kind of a very local celebration of their community, of the charities that matter, for giving blood to giving coats. And we've also seen people take the idea itself and change it. So one of my favorite campaigns is Giving Blue Day. The University of Michigan turned Giving Tuesday into Giving Blue Day, and they raised over $5 million last year. The organization Dress for Success turned Giving Tuesday into Giving Shoes Day, and they're a terrific organization which help women going back into the workforce, and they use Giving Tuesday to get people to get women shoes who are heading back into the workforce. So Giving Tuesday worked because the way New Power works is you're designing ideas not to be owned but to be co-owned. You're designing things so once they're out there in the world, people can take it and make it their own. And most interestingly with Giving Tuesday is how it's grown around the world. So it's changed and morphed now in 100 countries, and there were, believe it or not, 2,000 events in Russia last year around Giving Tuesday. And the fact you can take an idea from the Upper East Side of New York and see it scale like that is, I think, an example of how New Power can work. But none of that is about the technology. It's all about the mindset of how you think about the way you want your ideas to spread. And that's very hard for a set of institutions who are used to two things. The first is kind of that soundbite mentality where you kind of get everything perfect and then everyone replies. And the second thing is we've been trained to think about ownership as we literally stamp our brand on everything. You know, even the idea of a brand is a searing, a stamp of ownership on something. Often these days, if you've got your brand all over something, there's no space for anybody else to participate.
We're speaking with Henry Timms. He's the co-author of what I think will be a benchmark book called New Power: How Power Works in Our Hyper-Connected World and How to Make It Work for You. I'm cognizant of your time, and we're running short on my format. I guess my final question would be, your book, New Power, if I was in an older institution and I was looking at the org chart, and I used to do brand strategy, by the way, as a consultant, so I kind of follow what you're saying there. If I'm looking at the org chart of an old institution and I want to help them pivot into a new power institution, who should I start with your book? Who should I hand this book to?
The right answer is everybody. I think here's the truth of it. There is a new set of skills and capacities that people need to learn if they want to get ahead in the 21st century. And what the book lays out is precisely how to do that, right? How do you get your ideas to spread? How do you build movements? How do you think about the workplace? How do you think about leadership? Any institution who has thrived in the 20th century is looking around now thinking, you know, what got us to here isn't going to get us where next. So I think the first step is to really engage with this new set of tools that we draw out in the book, the new power skills. And then remember, too, that all of this is a practice, right? New power and all this kind of work, the danger is it's something that companies do once a year as a stunt. But actually, this is something you have to exercise on an ongoing basis. And the people who mobilize best are those people who do it most regularly. So I think the kind of the prescription for companies is the place to start is by reimagining how that power is flowing and working out what that means for your organization. And that's all about learning these new skills.
Yeah. And beyond your organization, I would add that if you like wanted to draw attention to anything past the end of your nose and you want to understand the 21st century, then this book is definitely a page turner. Mr. Timms, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for writing the book and best of luck on the tour. And we will definitely, I'll be promoting your stop here in Menlo Park on April the 7th.
Oh, that's terrific. We're looking forward to being there. And thank you so much for your interest.
That was Henry Timms. He's the co-author with Jeremy Hymans of New Power, How Power Works in Our Hyper-Connected World, and How to Make It Work for You. This book is a must-read for anyone who wants to organize, honestly, anything. Me Too, Black Lives Matter, gun control. The key is shining the light on your project twice as bright, twice as fast. New Power has the blueprint for that. And for links to the book and Mr. Timms's side hustle as an executive at the 92nd Street Y in New York, check out the show notes for this week. They live at KGORadio.com. And that's it for this week's show. We hope you like the stories we chose. Honestly, I had a blast. Theoretical physics, sci-fi, a startup for soft skills people, and how to navigate the 21st century's digital landscape. Woof. We're also at Facebook.com/Techonomics, and I'm at KGO Jason if you're on Twitter. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. Have great weeks, everybody.